This episode is brought to you by Morty, Buzzshot, Cogs by Clockwork Dog, Recon, and Patreon supporters like you.
Cogs by Clockwork Dog is an easy-to-use software-hardware platform for running interactive events, including escape rooms and other immersive experiences. Their plug-and-play hardware seamlessly integrates with their software, so you can create a show with lighting and sound cues without having to write a single line of code. Map all kinds of inputs to outputs by building up simple logic steps, which determine what you want to happen and when. Some of the best experiences in the world use Cogs, including The Room in Berlin and Phantom Peak in London. Cogs helps you create a full-on theatrical show, complete with lighting and sound cues, and all sorts of triggers. The Room in Berlin builds all their new escape rooms on the system, and it's allowed them to achieve their very high standards for immersion, lighting, sound, and automation by building their own custom plugins. Get the Cogs starter set for only $130 plus free shipping to the USA. This bundle is usually valued at $257. You can learn more and purchase your starter set at cogs.show. Use code REPOD at checkout. That's REPOD. Link and details in the show notes.
Welcome to the Reality Escape Pod, your lifeline when you need to get away from the real world. I'm David Spira, alongside my co-host, PG Law. Together, we're exploring immersive gaming from all angles, and we'll be joined by guests who really know their stuff. This season, we are shining a spotlight on Southern California in celebration of our convention, Recon, which will be in Universal City, California on August 18th and 19th, 2024. Tickets are on sale now at realityescapecon.com. And today's guests are the creators behind the Ministry of Peculiarities in Azusa, California. We're joined by Adam Moody, Jonathan Burke, and Benjamin Burke. Their first full-length game, Hope End, established their unique blend of escape room and immersive theater, elegantly mixing story, puzzles, and adventure into one of Southern California's preeminent experiences. Welcome, Adam, John, and Benjamin.
Thank you.
Thanks, David. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thrilled to have you.
This is great to have you on. Hope End honestly exploded onto the SoCal scene. I beta tested this. I played it when there was no hype, and I could not get over what you've created. And it's good to see that it's lived up to the hype, because I was definitely responsible for a lot of that.
I played it after the hype had been built up, and it lived up to it.
Glad to hear it.
Let's get started by learning a little bit about each of you. I want to talk about your backgrounds, what you were doing before making Hope End, and what are some of the skills that you've brought into it. Let's start with Adam.
I come from a finance background. I have my degree through University of Laverne in business. And so I had been working with a wealth management team out of Claremont, California for about 4 years before we started venturing into this industry. I also like to do home haunts. So prior to doing this, I was doing my own home haunts. I was helping others with home haunts and prop builds, and avid escape room enthusiasts, especially at the time. I think I probably had about 50 under my belt around 2016, 2017.
That's a lot for back then.
Yeah, it was a lot. And the community was still fairly small, it seemed like, but there were still a lot of new venues and the industry was still trying to find its own place. But that's my background into coming into the escape room industry and the immersive room.
Okay. Jonathan, how about you?
So for me, my undergraduate degree was in philosophy and my master's degree is in linguistics. So if you're asking how those fed into starting an escape room, the answer is hubris, which is, you'll notice, a continuing theme for the Ministry of Peculiarities. But I love puzzles. I was massively into geocaching in the early aughts. And it was really hanging out with Adam, and he started dragging me along to escape rooms that really made me fall in love with that. And then after that, he dragged me to immersive theater, and we took one look and said, this is what we want to do. And so we decided to marry the two.
My wife Lisa's background is in linguistics, and she's always inventing new and interesting ways to apply that, sometimes more directly, and sometimes the connection is tenuous, but she's just really good at stuff.
Yeah, I think there is more of a connection than one would immediately realize.
This sounds like the exact kind of thing that I'm going to want to talk to you about in the bonus episode. So we're going to do that.
Oh, please.
So, Benjamin, how did you get dragged into this?
Yeah, you know, same thing. I don't really have a background in anything relatable. I studied English and psychology in college, and I was teaching abroad, which I had been doing for a number of years. And Jonathan and Adam contacted me when I was living in New Zealand, saying, we're thinking about starting this. You got to come back and get involved. And so that was back in 2017, 2018.
So, Benjamin, you are one of the main actors that greet guests when they come into the escape room. Do you have an acting background?
I took a class in university.
I mean, you've performed before, though, to be clear.
Oh, yeah. I was in some high school productions.
And college.
One.
You do a great job at it.
Oh, thank you.
It frankly annoys me how much better at acting he is than I am.
Oh, the secret is I am as ridiculous a character as I am in real life. So it's very easy.
I've always said that I can't act, but I can play myself pretty well. Okay, so then I know that you said Adam had contacted Jonathan and said, let's do an escape room. But how did the core idea for the Ministry of Peculiarities come about? What were some of the main influences?
The ministry really is just an amalgamation of so many different influences. So it's really hard to nail down just one. But little known fact, we, prior to doing the Ministry of Peculiarities, had put something together and had spoke with the people involved with a series of unfortunate events. And as a solution, because Daniel's son, the author, was really into escape rooms and was interested in seeing the story come to life in escape rooms. And so we were in discussion with the author and the publisher and the lawyers. And eventually that did not go anywhere. But we really liked the world that was there. And we wanted to see something that was, obviously, I don't think anybody looks at the ministry and thinks series of unfortunate events, but I think you could probably see some of the influences there.
Yeah, I can really see that. I wouldn't have organically gotten there myself, yeah. But there is a line.
There's a line. But I don't think anybody would look at the two and then immediately point to it. But if we had never mentioned anything, I think that's probably a big influence as far as just like the feel. And then, of course, as far as influences directly, I don't know. I think Jonathan and I really like the idea of just a really underutilized government agency that's defunct and loves bureaucracy and red tape and all the intricacies of just making things overly difficult for no reason. We found the humor in that. And I think you get a little taste of that when you come in and instead of playing a video on a screen, we have a 1960s prop-up screen that goes over to a little slide projector that is manually operated, and we make things very difficult on ourselves, and that's all intentional.
I love the idea of that because at its core, a game is basically taking a story and then setting up a series of obstacles for the main characters to overcome. So it makes sense that you've latched onto the idea of bureaucracy because that's basically what it is. It's a series of obstacles for all of us to overcome.
And bureaucracy is also a series of unfortunate events.
One of our major influences is time spent at the DMV.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
The great equalizer.
The puzzles write themselves because naturally life can be difficult.
In terms of escape room influences, one of the ones that definitely inspired me was, I believe it was called the Cromwell Estate. It's long gone, where you had to like break into a house or something like that. And just the idea of starting outside was something that really stuck with me. It was like, this is something I really want to do.
On the subject here of where you're placing that magic circle, it feels like you've taken the concept of immersion to a different level by constructing your magic circle in the website and in the lobby, and you were sort of pulled into the ministry before you ever start playing the game. What is driving that?
There's a few things. One of them is our experiences playing different escape rooms back in the day, and I suppose even now. And I've heard you talk about this, David, in some of your talks, but the idea of having a compelling lobby experience, right? Sometimes the lobby can be kind of...
corporate or sterile.
Thank you. Sterile was the word I was looking for, in fact. Yeah, corporate or sterile. And we didn't want that. You know, like sitting through all of the safety briefings and the do this, don't do that. Okay, now, you know, you're waking up in a forest in the Siberia. It was too jarring. And then even like at the end, you solve the final puzzle, you open the door, and there's like a quasi-enthusiastic GM there to greet you. These were the things that we wanted to avoid.
To add to that, I think we once heard an excellent point, and maybe Jonathan could tell me who we heard this from. But the moment your participants come to your website, that's the moment that immersion starts. And immersion starts at the time that they book. Immersion starts with the email they receive. Immersion starts with a conversation that they have with you. And that should never be broken unless it's intentionally done for legal purposes. And we found our hoops that we've had to essentially go through. For example, our FAQs are no longer cryptic, and some of them are, but not as much. And
how dare you bring this up?
I thought it was genius. And look, I have no problem with the way that we did it, to be honest. I thought it was great and it was so entertaining, but go ahead, Dave.
Sorry. Let's talk about the controversy.
Oh, Lord.
I'll just say, PG called us out for changing the FAQs, which was something that, yeah, I definitely originally wrote to be in-world. And the thing about the ministry is, I don't know how in detail we want to get, but we were struggling at the beginning to be known. And so I made some SEO changes to the FAQs to try and remedy that a little bit. But I did try to still keep it in-world, answering the question first and doing the flavor text afterwards. I have been toying with the idea of returning it to the original state.
Adam
is shaking his head vehemently now.
I think that what he did is mitigating a lot of phone calls, is what I'm saying. So it's smart that we did it the way that we did it. It's way more entertaining the way it originally was intended. But there's lots of things with the site that are still great. The radio, I don't know if you guys toyed with the radio.
Of course.
There's secret files that are hidden on the website, back pages that you can't really get to unless you know some code words and have figured out some stuff. So
there's definitely pros and cons to your approach. For somebody who's an experienced player like myself, we were delighted by the website. I remember the original FAQ. I went on and on about it to David. I thought it was so funny, but it was a little bit cryptic. And I can understand why people who aren't as familiar with escape rooms or immersive experiences will be a little bit confused. So it's a really difficult balancing act. Same with, we had a question about the booking times. And I remember Tommy told us, he was like, they replied in character and this was so exciting. And he showed it to us and it was so funny. But again, if you're just, you know, the average Joe trying to book an outing, they don't really know what they're getting into. So it's such a tough balancing act.
When we first launched Recon, the Reality Escape Convention, back in 2020, a lot of our initial graphic design, photography, and writing was in this very serious secret society vibe. And we very quickly ran into a lot of walls with that. And we had to more or less blink that out of existence because there were a few problems with it. One was that we didn't want this to be secret. We wanted a lot of people to come. The second was that we were causing a lot more confusion and creating far more questions than we were creating fun or enjoyment. And so we had to completely readjust. The upside of this was that we allowed a lot of other people to be able to write because it wasn't in such a particular voice anymore.
Yeah, that's really been a balance for us. There are still things for us that are, you know, hidden, like we still don't have a sign out in front, which we've worked into our mythos. Originally, we threw around ideas like, okay, well, we're never going to be out of character, or like we wouldn't be doing an interview like this, or maybe we'll always wear masks or something. And obviously, those fell by the wayside. So, I mean, I hear you. It's been a balance we've had to feel out through experience.
On that subject, throughout the ministry and everything you've made, you're creating this unified narrative world that comes with the benefit of this wonderful experiential cohesion, especially for people who poke and prod and dig more deeply into it. But it also comes with a lot of these burdens, because anything under the Ministry of Peculiarities brand has to fit within this very quirky world you have built. I'm curious what you at this point are seeing as some of the major pros and the major cons to that.
I think you pretty much were very pointed with your question, because it answers the question right away, is that we are really constrained within the ministry's world. But while that might limit our creativity as far as maybe being able to do, like, I don't know.
You're not doing a Pirates of the Caribbean game.
We're not going to do a Pirates of the Caribbean or a jail cell, but who knows? Maybe. what that has forced us to do is actually, it's more of a challenge of creativity. And I think that's where you start getting into more of a unique scenario, or a haunted house is not necessarily in itself unique, but maybe the approach of the haunted house is. And so that's where our creativity starts coming from, a different angle. And I think that's what catches people off, is I'm expecting a pirate ship, but I didn't expect it to be navigated by Higgins, and he doesn't know how to navigate a ship. We have to come from a different angle on things. So it's definitely forcing a lot more creativity. And I think that's a positive. It's also a challenge.
That sounds great, actually. When you said pirate ship, I immediately thought about how, so we interviewed AJ Jacobs last season, and his next book is called A Year of Living Constitutionally. And he talks about, what was it called, David?
Article 1, Section 8, Letters of Mark and Reprisal.
Back in the day, you could apply to Congress to become like a legal pirate, and you had to go through bureaucracy. You had to jump through these hoops so that you could get your fishing boat branded as a pirate to go attack enemies of the state. And so immediately when you said pirates, and I was like, I could totally see you guys doing a pirate game where, you know, you're jumping through these political hoops, and maybe that's part of it, is trying to become a pirate yourself. But I really like the take that you have on that, where you've got this brand. Yes, does it limit you? Maybe. But now you've got a quirky spin. You can take any trope, actually, and put your own spin on it. And so I think having an overarching world is always really fun, especially for people who are fans of your work. And that gives you leeway to put like Easter eggs and nods to other games in there, because it's still within world.
One of the things that's kind of arisen spontaneously here is, as we gather on actors, we've let them create their own lobby character. Most of them started as actors in the room, and so they witnessed and eavesdropped on a lot of the antics that happened out here. And so I think they got the idea of what the world was supposed to be. And so when they started moving into the lobby and doing the lobby experience, they created their own characters, and they are hilarious. Sometimes I'm in the back working on something and I hear them interacting with the audience and I'm just rolling back there. And the fact that they've been able to do that with no guidance, but still stay within the world, astounds me.
That's awesome.
The last thing I wanted to add is that, like, if you look at the ministry, it is a reflection of a lot of our likes, interests, and dislikes as well. So it's not a huge stretch for us to stay constrained by some of the limits that the ministry has set up.
We're taking a moment to thank our sponsor, Morty. Morty is a free app for discovering, planning, tracking, and reviewing escape rooms, haunts, and other immersive social outings. And Morty is now available for all to use on its fantastic website experience, iPhone app, and its new Android app, available in the Google Play Store now. I believe in Morty so much that I have a stake in it as an advisor. If anyone missed it last season, Morty launched an Android app. You can finally use Morty on your Android device, and it's great. You should absolutely go and download this from the Google Play Store. This Android app is now, in addition to its other suite of available places to interact with the app. You can go to their website, you can use the iPhone app, which so many of us have been using for so long. Morty is broadly available now. So wherever you want to look for escape rooms, Morty is there for you to find them.
You can learn more at morty.app/repod. That's REPOD
to sign up and get a special badge for our listeners. Link and details in the show notes.
So you talked a little bit about the acting, and performance is a very large part of what makes Hope End unique, and it's a key part of the experience. And I know you said that the actors take on their own roles with little guidance, but there must be some type of guidance or training when it comes to hiring these actors. What do you look for in a performer?
One of the things that we've insisted on is working with trained actors and, for the most part, working actors as well, which has been a struggle to keep a full staff while people are pursuing independent productions at the same time. But we really value the training that these people have. And we really try and figure out whether the actor is going to be able to interact with the audience in a way that's compelling. So script is important, but what's even more important is playing the character to the audience and improvising in a way that still makes sense within the world that we've created.
I have a question, and we may cut this if it feels too spoilery, but I was really impressed with the actor because they speak in rhyme. They've got this kind of monologue and it's all rhyming. But when we were interacting with them, they were responding to us in rhyme still. So I got to know, is that totally improvised, or do you have written rhyming prompts that are like answers that they've already rehearsed and practiced?
The rhyming thing was something we went back and forth on so many times at the very beginning of this. Is this going to be lame? Is this going to work? I still sometimes wonder, like, if this was a bad idea and we should stop doing it. But to answer your question directly, we have a number of couplets that they can use in response to different things that the players say. And by now, we pretty much know everything. Anything a player is going to say, we've seen before.
So they're not just freestyle rhyming.
I would love that.
I would say at one point they were.
Do you have an example of some of those couplets?
I wrote them, so you have to recite them.
Yeah, oh, boy.
So if they're bad, blame me.
Yeah. Someone asks, you know, who are you? And she'll respond, mistress of this manor where'er I sit, an heiress, a queen, a derelict. I whose prosperity has faded from sight. I whose servants once called Mrs. Wright. And that's the name of the character.
Yeah, deep cut. We don't hear that one very often.
I love it. I think it just really sets the tone for the entire experience. And it just lets you know, we're not in Kansas anymore. We're not in Azusa. We're stepping into something that's a little bit weird. It's a little bit old fashioned. It makes it feel cohesive.
On this subject, throughout the entire lobby experience of the Ministry of Peculiarities, and it also permeates into the games, you've crafted this world that gives permission to play. You're using humor, you're using magical gags, you're using some weird, quirky stuff. Can you break down the value of bringing this type of play into the overall experience?
I think you really hit the nail on the head. That is nearly foremost to us. The idea that coming to do an escape room or immersive theater is an invitation to play. It's an invitation to take on a different role than my everyday corporate life or whatever. To be clear, we have tried many gags. Some have had longevity. Some we've done once and said, we're never doing that again. And part of it is trying to reach a diversity of types of people. Like, what are they going to be into? We have a character that comes and reads the bones. And we have a character that just sits there and the other characters complain about the fact that he's there. So that's part of it. Part of it is world building. You know, we'll have an idea that we want to try out, and maybe it's in beta for something we're planning down the road. And so we'll do it in the lobby. Those are the things that come to mind for me in terms of value.
What's the gag that you tried once and failed? Why do you think it failed?
Oh, there's so many. Can you think of one?
Do you like biting into a banana three times each showing? How about that one?
That's a good one.
A banana with a peel on, by the way.
Okay, so we have this weird exit in the back hidden away. And so we had a couple of characters, one of which was me alone up to it. And we were stuck in a time loop. So we would come in the front door, put our coats on the rack, grab a piece of fruit and bite into it while we were having this conversation, just kind of nonchalantly, not drawing attention to ourselves. And then we would walk straight back to the exit and put on a different coat and come back in the front door and do the same thing. And by the third iteration, I was taking a bite of the banana with the peel. And it just, it sounds funnier than it actually is. And so we did it once and never did it again.
I was laughing the whole time. I thought it was great because I wasn't the one biting into the banana, but...
I gotta be honest with you, that sounds wonderful for everybody but the person biting into the banana peel.
I mean, yeah. Wait,
so is this a gag that you would do just as part of the escape room experience, like in the waiting lobby?
Yeah. When we have groups that show up early enough, we do all kinds of things. Over the past 2 years, we've developed quite a repertoire, I should say, mostly Benjamin.
A pre-show. It's like when you show up early to Cirque du Soleil and you get a pre-show.
So the message here is don't be like me when I visited the Ministry of Peculiarities and have massive car problems and show up late and very harried.
Oh, we were sweating that one for sure.
Yeah, I felt bad.
BuzzShot is escape room software, powering business growth, player marketing, and improving the customer experience. They offer an assortment of pre- and post-game features, including robust waiver management, branded team photos, and streamlined review management for Yelp, TripAdvisor, Google Reviews, and Morty. BuzzShot now also has integration with our other Repod sponsors, Morty and Cogs. BuzzShot automates the branding for your team photos. You can add overlays, including your company logo, the name of the escape room, and there's countless possibilities for seasonal promotions like holiday graphics or birthday parties. BuzzShot helps create memories for your guests. Streamline your marketing and grow your escape room business. Repod listeners get an extended free trial and 20% off your first 3 months with no setup fees or hidden charges. Visit buzzshot.com/repod, that's R-E-P-O-D, to learn more. Link and details in the show notes.
Quirkiness feels like a core value of not just the Ministry of Peculiarities, but I think maybe the three of you as humans. Is that a good read?
I would say that's accurate.
If by quirky you mean extremely awkward.
No, we're all quirky in our own right, David. I think that's a good read.
I love it. I think it feels like you are all unique individuals who have decided to go and turn the uniqueness of yourselves into this unusual institution that makes weird stuff. And I think it's really cool.
Oh, thank you.
Coming back to the actors, and knowing that, Jonathan, that you have a background in linguistics, you've already talked about the rhyming schemes and all of the different quirky gags that are being played throughout the ministry, but it does feel like you are using language in very specific ways throughout your experience. Am I right about that?
Absolutely. The writing of Hope Ends, actually the writing of anything we've written, has been I was going to use the word excruciating, but instead I'll use the word painstaking process, where we have tried to be very deliberate about what we're putting out there. And wording is so important in creating tone and setting the mood and getting things across. And we try to use that to create this sense of whimsy or bureaucracy at times. And then in terms of Hope Ends, I think a great example of using language as an asset is in the dining room scene, where we have an interaction between the actors and some tech. And in one couplet, that actor is trying to get across the nature of her relationship with a different family member. And then that family member also responds. The crafting of that was very deliberate and very difficult.
I'll ask the same question about movement. The projector scene during the introduction, that feels like everything about the movement there is particular. Is that also a thing?
I'll personally say that I think about movement when I'm drawing people into the lobby. One of the things that I try to do is introduce people to the space. And so when they come in, I'll drag one person over to this filing cabinet we have over there. send one person over to the Victrola, one person to the phone booth to explore that, just to try and encourage exploration. Talking about choreography and movement, yeah, it's definitely, I think of it as a play, and I'm conscious of how people are observing it.
We have a couple of actors that have been with us for a long time, and they've helped somewhat with that theatrical background of blocking. This is where you should be. This is what you should be doing. A lot of that is more relevant with Hope End itself. But when I work the lobby, sorry for any of those that get me instead of Benjamin, I know when I'm setting up the projector screen, this is what I'm saying, or this is the point at which I'm bringing over the projector, and all of that's very deliberate.
That's one of the things, David and I have talked about this before also, but we really love how you make such a production out of dragging this projector out, which is on like an old rickety metal rolling table. It's really loud. It's a little bit obnoxious. You got to find the cord and plug it in, and you use the projector to show the rules, and it turns what's normally a really boring part of the experience, and our eyes are glazed over, someone's droning, reading off the rules, and instead, it's a spectacle, and we're all watching. We're like, what's going on? What's happening here? And it just makes it such a fun part of the experience.
It's obnoxiously compelling.
That's an interesting combination.
Let's dive into your game, Hope End, which has taken me a ridiculously long amount of time to not say Hope's End, because the game is called Hope End. Where did this name come from?
It came from me. I named it. So literally, the family that we're talking about is, it's the Hope family. Also, Hope End is a real place for those that wish to deep dive into that.
I thought, so I was told when I came in that you had bought parts of, was it a church or something like that facade, that outside facade, and it came with the sign.
It did not come with the sign.
But the stained glass was salvaged from a church. Yeah.
Yeah. Circa 1911.
It's good stained glass. So Hope End is a real place. You're playing with the wordplay of the family, the Hopes, and what seems like the end of the line for them as a family. How did the game itself come to fruition? What was the process for you guys?
Back in the very early days, we're talking like maybe 2017 or something like that, we all started working on different projects. Hope End was the one that I started and thought about ways in which that could be integrated into an escape room. I thought like, okay, the very first thing we need to have is a story. And so that's kind of what I wrote and hashed out with Adam and Benjamin first. And the inspiration behind that story is my family, essentially, because Hope End is a story about family dysfunction and that kind of thing. So when I wrote Hope End, it started as a meditation on family dynamics.
And I think it's very reflective in both the story that you're telling in this game, but also it's incredibly reflective in the gameplay, which is frankly unusual to see such a deep thematic loop that is tying story and so many different aspects of play together.
When we wrote Hope End, it was originally a much more serious experience. I think especially the dynamics that you see in the lobby hadn't really bled into the story as much as they have, and I think rightly so. I'm very happy with how it came out. But just to give you some indication of the way things have changed, we had Victorian poetry. We have all of these lines that our actors recorded that have been cut. And again, I feel rightly so. Just as the story kind of evolved over time and the ethos behind the ministry also evolved.
It's very cool that this game is a living entity. And it sounded to me like when I played it, it evolved quite a bit from when PG had played it. And it sounds like if I were to go back and play it again, I would see a lot of additional evolution in terms of the way that you're pulling all of this stuff together, which is really neat. I didn't realize that was happening to the extent that it is, but with all of the actor-driven interaction and just freeform play, it makes sense that is going to be a natural byproduct of the process.
I think the freeform play One of the side benefits is that people want to come back and play it again because you are doing these gags, because I feel like you could come back and have a different experience. And I remember when Lisa came out to visit LA and they were booking teammates for their games, she said that Hope, and in particular, had a very large number of people who were like, I've already played it, but I really want to go back and play it again with you. And so that might be a fun byproduct of all of these extra things that you're putting into it.
That rarely happens, by the way. We rarely have locals who are like, oh, you're going to that game? I want to jump in. I promise I won't solve anything that I've done already, but I really want to go and see some parts of this. And it was, I think Lisa had to say no to quite a few people when we came out to play. Moving on from Hope End, in 2022, you took the fan favorite prize at the Los Angeles Immersive Invitational for your 12-minute production, Recalcitrant Research. Can you tell us about this experience?
Right. So the Immersive Invitational, it was like a 48-hour, like a film festival competition, but putting together an immersive production.
I just want to say, like, this was our first foray into immersive theater proper. I don't know if that's the right term. I felt it was a stretch for myself, especially under the conditions of pressure, right? So for me, it was kind of the litmus test of like, okay, can we do this further? Like Benjamin said, there's points I was close to tears over that 48-hour period. But for me, the answer was yes. Yes, this is the sort of thing I want to do in the future as well. It was a great experience.
It's probably helpful that you already have brand identities and a world that you want to build within. So in 2023, at the Overlook Film Festival in New Orleans, I know you created an immersive game called Lingering Echoes. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Okay, so Lingering Echoes, it all revolves around this device called the Vitaphone. And so we were called because we received a message from someone concerned about a person that was appearing and disappearing. That was our kind of little teaser that we put out there for Lingering Echoes, where we were being called to our field office in New Orleans because they needed assistance in this person that was coming in and out of reality. Lingering Echoes was this short run that was the framework for the immersive production of the Overlook immersive game that involved some people from Magic Castle, E3W, and there's several others. Yannick was also there doing his production. There was a lot of good stuff.
Was that Undersigned?
Yes, Undersigned. It was escaping my memory, but it's such a great concept, and I wish I would have been able to do it. Some of us were able to actually participate.
Undersigned may be my personal favorite immersive theatrical production of all time.
Oh, wow.
That was an incredible experience for me, and I hope to get him on the show one day.
He shared some of that prior to us collaborating over the concept of how to introduce his. We were working as the framework for onboarding, essentially, for a lot of these productions. But along that, we also created a game where we are trying to solve this mystery of this person that's coming in, this entity who is R.R. Rutherford. And so we had ministry agents there, Gertrude, who was our parapsychologist, and interviewing people as they went to some of these immersive productions and asking them if they saw anything weird, were they feeling anything weird? And so we're bringing this more theatrical way of debriefing people and giving them some room to talk about what they got to see, what they got to experience, and then also taking that and then building it into a world of this emotional turmoil is what's creating this problem here. What you're experiencing, your emotion, your experience, your reaction to these productions, it's what's manifesting this entity. And I guess we could spoil it. I don't think it's going to be a remount. We may have a part two, who knows. But we built this device and it looked like it was something out of time that took the vibrations of sound and film and everything's vibrating. And through those vibrations, we were able to bring this person back to life. And that was the crescendo and the final moment of our production there, where he comes back to life and you had to decide, were you with the ministry or were you with Gertrude, who was trying to bring this person back, and who were you with? And so we had a lot of black hatters, obviously, at Overlook, who really wanted to play, let's bring him back. We used that terminology of the emotion and what was bringing it. And we created a device to send Rutherford back to where he came from. And so we have some great photos that you may have seen of Higgins carrying around these big tube lamps. And as he got close to people, it glowed brighter. And so as it glowed brighter, he was collecting all these emotions, and then it powered up the machine to send him back from where he came.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah. So in terms of player experience, it was a departure from what we had done with Hope End, even with the Immersive Invitational, where it's a game that was spread out over the course of 3 days. We had characters around New Orleans even. And so our actors were working for hours on end because it was just an open world where people could go and experience a scripted scene that would happen at 10 a.m. And then after that, they were given a task and they would go and try to perform that at any point during the day. And so it was really interesting to be able to create that, that felt people were living this thing. It wasn't just a scenario that they were buying a ticket to. They were interacting with these characters. At one point, they are asked to torture a character without giving away too much there, or I don't know, getting us in trouble with the authorities.
They had to bury a body. We had some fun, and a special thank you to all the actors that were there. We had Mike Eastman, who also worked with us during the Invitational.
Paris Langley, Emma Kuhn, and Nina Chatman.
Yes, and I will also say my wife, Jessica Moody, was also involved there. And so thank you to all of them. It really made it special. It was very tiring, I think, out of everything we've done. This was one of the more stressful productions. You're looking at basically the team, the production team right here. Anytime they pitched in any hands or anything, they usually volunteered that time. So it was a great help in putting it together. That was a big production for us.
It sounds massive and sprawling, and it really sounds like people were just getting to live all of the different dreams. You get to torture someone, you get to hide a body. Like, you're really working on all of the wish fulfillment right here.
That sounds like so much fun. Richard Burns wrote a piece on Room Escape Artist about length of time spent in immersive experiences. And there is really something to it. And more I find myself gravitating towards long experiences, because when someone's created a compelling world, I don't want only an hour. And I feel, David knows, I have massive FOMO. I want to look in every crevice and corner and see it. And I'm one of those people that when I read a series, books that I really like, I get kind of depressed when, you know, I'm on the last book and I have to say goodbye to all these characters. So 3 days spent with my favorite characters in a world that's really fun and weird and bizarre, it just sounds like a blast to me.
Length of time in experience is this really powerful tool, as long as you have the team that can fill that time properly. But I always get worried about it when we start talking about it too much, because length of time is magic. It really, you need time to get sucked into an experience. And for some people, by the time they are sucked in an hour experience, they might be 30, 40 minutes into it. And then they have 20 minutes where the magic really comes together. And you can do a lot more if you tack on another 30 minutes or an hour or 5 hours past that. But that comes at incredible cost to the production, to the operations, and to the participants. And so it's one of those things where I see the power of it, and I love it when people explore it. But I also hear the exhaustion in your collective voices when you talk about running a 3-day citywide experience. And I don't want to lose track of the costs of time.
Yeah, it definitely stretched us thin. I think we're getting like 2-3 hours of sleep every night. It was pretty rough. Up early to go do the setup, get our people ready. Got to get the coffee for them in the morning. And that's when you're doing a whole day like that, where it was probably 10 to 12 hours of having people there. It's trying to run the production where you have breaks. And then not only the breaks, but now it's like, who's going to get food while we have people that are coming over here for onboarding? And I would love to say that we did it 100% awesome, knocked it out of the park, but you know, it was a challenge. And I'm glad you see that.
If you're not making mistakes, you're not trying hard enough. Mm-hmm. Nothing is ever going to be perfect. And that's also sort of a core tenet of us as reviewers, is that nothing is perfect. And that's not a knock on creators. That is an acknowledgement of practical reality. Nothing is ever going to be perfect. And even if you make something amazing, there's always an opportunity for more, which it sounds like in the case of Hope End, you are always finding ways to push on the boundaries of what you've created, which I love and respect so much.
And I also want to say, I really appreciate all the hard work you put into your productions. It really pays off. Anytime there is an event in Southern California, we have Nerd Day, which is like an enthusiast meetup, a day to celebrate escape rooms for enthusiasts. And anytime Ministry of Peculiarities shows up, you guys make a full production out of it. I always look forward to your experiences the most because you come in full characters and with sets and you really go all out. And I definitely appreciate it. So I want you guys to know that we do notice it and it's worth it. And so I'm also wondering what comes next. Are you planning on any additional escape rooms or experiences? Any new projects that you want to talk about or share with us?
We have a few things in the works. We are getting our second room open. Those of you that are attending Recon should expect our second experience. We have this information has never been released before, but our second experience is called Apotheosis. That's what you can expect, whatever that means. I'm not sure either. Maybe you can look it up for me.
You guys decided to go back to your roots of making things difficult for yourselves, huh?
Always, always.
What does apotheosis mean?
It's worth a search.
All right. Well, this is very mysterious, and I cannot wait to come and find out what it's truly about. What is the best way for people to follow your work or connect with you online?
You could always follow us on Instagram and Facebook. That's at the Ministry of Peculiarities on both of those, but you can find both those links on our website, theministryofpeculiarities.com.
We'll have links for all of that in the show notes.
Adam, John, Benjamin, thank you so much for joining us. I truly appreciate how quirky and how diligent and how prone to excess the three of you are in the way that you craft and produce and think about the work that you're making. As somebody who also cares probably too much about the details and the finer points of presentation and cadence and all sorts of other minutiae that can so quickly get left on the cutting room floor, I just wanted to say to you that I see what you're doing and I see what your audience gets, but also what it takes out of you. And I appreciate it so very much. So thank you for that. And thank you for sharing all of these insights and lessons and just sharing your quirky selves with us.
Thanks so much, David. Speaking for myself, I have been floored by the reaction to Hope End. I'm a perfectionist, which is kind of what you're alluding to a little bit. And, you know, up until we opened Hope End, I was convinced that I had helped create a total flop. And so I've just been overwhelmed and just so grateful to the positive response that we've gotten.
Oh, it's well earned. Thanks, guys.
Thank you both for having us on today.
It's been a pleasure. The Reality Escape Pod is produced by Teresa Piazza, with support by Lisa Spira, Richard Burns, and Tommy Haughton. We're edited by Steve Ewing of Stand Inside Media, music by Ryan Elder, logo by Janine Procht, and all of this is brought to you by RoomEscapeArtist.com, your home for well-researched, rational, and reasonably humorous escape room and immersive gaming content and events. If we haven't made it clear enough this season, the Reality Escape Convention, Recon, is happening August 18th and 19th, 2024. And if you buy your tickets before May 1st, you will get special benefits in the form of priority session selection for Imagine Ne'er-do-wells and the 49 boxes. Do it now. Get your tickets. We'd also really appreciate it and hope to see you at Recon. You can learn more at realityescapecon.com. Details in the show notes. Believe it or not, we are 10 years into Room Escape Artist. And it took a long time for us to decide that we were going to go and open up a Patreon, but we eventually got there because some loyal readers at the time were really insistent. Over the years, we have added a lot of different things to that Patreon. People at the $5 level get access to the bonus show for this podcast. Folks at the $15 level get the incredible Spoilers Club. But more than anything, they get to support all of the things that we're doing here. And that, It's hard to tell you just how much that means to PG and I, to the entire team at Room Escape Artist. We put in so much time, so much love, and so much energy into everything that we are doing here to support the escape room and immersive gaming communities, to push them to be safer and more fun, to be smarter and more efficient, to try and pull new players in. We're working on all of these things all the time. And the money and support that we get from our Patreon community is the fuel that keeps all of that moving forward. If you're a part of that, thank you so much. And if you have been considering becoming a part of it, give it a shot. We really, truly will appreciate it. Thanks. You can learn more about all of this at patreon.com/roomescapeartist. Thank you to our new high-level Patreon backers, Twisted Limits Escape Room and PJ Mann. We appreciate you. Big thank you to our highest-level Patreon supporters, Karen, Dawnward, Panic Room, Escapism, Olivier Escape, Escaparium, Byron Delmonico, Breakout Games, Keystone Escape Games, Derek Tam, Paula Swan, and Rex Miller. Thank you for your ongoing support. And thank you to all of our patrons at all levels.
You've made it to the end of this podcast. You must be an amazing, resilient, and very loyal person. If you're still feeling that delightful afterglow, why don't you head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you review your podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. It really means a lot, and it helps us to spread the word.
Our location is in kind of a seedy strip mall, and our immediate neighbors are a massage parlor and an income tax place. We tend to keep our front door locked, but one day we were in the middle of resetting the room and didn't have anybody in the lobby. And we had been in the room for, you know, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes. And, you know, we hear like a out in the lobby. And so we come out and there's a person sitting here and we're like, can we help you? And he was looking for a massage. I don't know what he was expecting, but
so we gave him one. Just kidding.
That's perfect. Great.